want you to know, and I want you to spread the word. I do want to be president for all Americans, not just some, not just the people who support me and vote for me. I want to be president for everyone, because we all have a role to play in building that better future.
That's why I'm going to win Michigan. I believe we're going to win Michigan. They have ripped cars out of there, factories out of there, plants out of there. Same thing, Ohio. So many companies have gone to Mexico and other countries. And we're going to win these states by tremendous amounts because people are tired of being ripped off.
But just to show you how important North Carolina is, if I gave Hillary Clinton North Carolina, it is the state that can really block Donald Trump.
China may not want to get off on the wrong foot with a new U.S. president, but whoever that ends up being, Beijing will likely do its best to size them up early on. Chinese Premier Li Keqiang is adamant that whoever ends up in the White House, China-U.S. relations will develop in a positive way, aware that any serious friction between the world's top two economies could send destabilizing ripples worldwide.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10, and today is Tuesday. It's November 8th, 2016, otherwise known as Election Day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. It is finally here, Election Day, and the polls are now open across the Eastern time zones. Just a few moments ago, all the polls on the East Coast opened up.
Your voice, your vote, and it's here. After a year and a half of waiting, it is Election Day 2016. Hillary Clinton finished up her campaigning with a rally in Philadelphia, then one in Raleigh, North Carolina. Then she landed back in Westchester, New York.
ABC News on the air just moments ago with a special report about the opening of the election polls on the East Coast. It is a big day for both of the candidates, all of the candidates running for president. Will we elect the first woman president of the United States, or will we take another position and elect Donald Trump? It is a big decision weighing heavily on the minds of investors. They seem to like Hillary Clinton more than Donald Trump, and we'll get into that a little bit later as we bring in Heather Long from CNN Money. We'll talk about how the election is playing on the markets and investments. But first, at the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are off 16 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are also lower after a gangbuster day yesterday. Overseas, markets are generally mixed in Europe and in Asia, generally higher this morning. Here in the United States, around the world, oil is trading up about 25 cents a gallon, about 20, almost a quarter of a percent at $44.99 a barrel. So why do the markets seem to like Hillary Clinton more than, let's say, Donald Trump? Why did the markets react as they did the other day when it was FBI announcing that Hillary Clinton had been cleared again in the FBI scandal? Well, there's a little history, and we thought we would turn to Dan Clifton, a strategist at Research Partners. He's the head of policy there. He thinks he knows why.
We have 100 years of data showing that when the incumbent party wins, markets rally, and when the opposition party wins, markets sell off. So in a certain sense, this is no different than any other time that we've had an election where we have an open election. In fact, that makes sense to us. You kind of know what Hillary Clinton wants to do. You could put bookends around it. It's a lot of status quo from the existing administration.
Again, Dan Clifton, a strategist at Research Partners, the head of policy research there. It's going to drive our conversation this morning here on The Opening Bell. Let's bring in Heather Long. She's a senior writer at CNN Money, a regular here on The Opening Bell. And good morning. Happy Election Day, Heather.
Hi, Steve. Yeah, it's finally here.
It is. To a lot of fanfare, I guess. There are polls now open where you are on the East Coast. Are there already lines?
Yeah, I'm not seeing lines, but certainly people have already gone to the polls. I also just noted that it looks like vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine has already voted in his home state of Virginia this morning. So he got there early, and I'm sure we'll see the other candidates soon.
Well, you heard Dan Clifton there talking about why the markets react perhaps the way they do with politics. Is he accurate there? Is that a fair way to describe things?
I mean, yeah, that's certainly what I'm hearing. I will say there's also a historical precedent that the market rallies either on election day. In this case, it seems like we got it a little bit early. So there's an upswing historically on heading into the election. And then regardless of who wins, there's usually a little bit of a downturn the day after the election. So that's also not entirely unusual, but obviously it was a really big surge yesterday, 371 points in the Dow. We haven't seen that big of a gain this year since early January, well, I guess late January, and biggest gain for the S&P since March. So that's a pretty substantial turnaround.
Watching global coverage this morning from other countries, and especially business coverage, a lot of folks, especially CEOs in some foreign countries around the world, are very concerned if Donald Trump is elected. They seem to know what they're going to get with Hillary Clinton. They're very worried about Donald Trump. Are you hearing the same thing?
Definitely. The reality is some business leaders go as far as to project that the economy could go into a recession if Donald Trump wins. Now, that may be a bit extreme. It'll depend, obviously, on what policies get enacted. But there's certainly a lot of concern throughout this election. What's been a huge issue? It's been globalization, trade, with Trump threatening to put tariffs, particularly on Mexico and China. And so that certainly has a lot of executives worried and a lot of Wall Street worried. It was interesting. We looked at an E-Trade poll of active investors, and back earlier in kind of the March-April time frame, it was almost neck and neck. Investors had a little bit of a preference for Clinton then, but it was really within the margin of error. But that changed dramatically by the last read we had in October. It was 60% of active investors favoring Clinton. Again, along those lines of what you're saying, it felt like she would be the status quo and be the steadier hand. And under 40% supporting Trump. So there's certainly been a surge of momentum for her on Wall Street.
Heather Long, a senior stock market economy writer at CNN Money. You can follow her at Buy Heather Long. Heather, we'll continue our conversation, Election Day conversation here, and talk a little bit about how investments and politics sometimes don't mix. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, some worldwide stocks are trading a little off this morning, including some global chemical companies. Dow is off this morning. Here in Illinois, we're watching some gainers, ADM, Abbott Laboratories up this morning. Baxter International also up about 0.5%. It's 520.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stocks were mixed today following strong Wall Street gains as investors focused on the final hours of a tight U.S. presidential race. The Federal Reserve said consumers borrowed more in September, a sign that recent job growth and wage gains left Americans feeling a little more comfortable carrying debt. Consumer debt has climbed at an annual pace of 6.3%. Stocks surged on Wall Street Monday, breaking a 9-day losing streak after the FBI said newly discovered emails didn't warrant any action against Hillary Clinton. The Dow jumped 371 points. The S&P gained 46 points. Print newspapers may be disappearing, but not after this election day. The day after President Obama's win in 2008, there was a rush for old-fashioned papers. Today, some papers are printing extra copies. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 521, and this morning in Dixville Notch, New Hampshire.
Hillary Clinton, four votes.
The first place in the country to vote this morning, Donald Trump getting two votes. Hillary Clinton winning there with four votes. Heather Long of CNN Money is with us this morning. Heather, as our conversation continues on this Election Day morning, boy, if Brexit didn't teach us anything, Dixville Notch is one of those cautionary tales, I would bet, right?
Yes. I have to admit, I was thinking that a little bit myself yesterday, watching the big surge in the markets. That, as people may recall, is exactly what happened. It happened on the day that the Brexit vote happened. So the equivalent of today, we seem to get our big bounce on Monday instead of the actual voting day. But it did seem a bit euphoric. particularly since we didn't have a whole, the polls certainly favor Clinton, but it wasn't like we had a whole lot of new information coming in. Obviously, we got the FBI news, but there wasn't a lot of polling that would reflect that.
Right, and with the polling, it's every poll almost said that Brexit had no chance of passing, and then, of course, we know what happened there. So, you know, experts should say don't mix investments with politics, or at the very least, don't let politics sway your investment. Is that a good piece of advice?
Yes. Well, again, it all depends upon your time frame. You've probably heard a lot of this, too, from strategists you talk to. It's going to be a bumpy few days. We've already seen that yesterday. Things can go up very quickly. Things can go down very quickly. We certainly learned that lesson from Brexit. But I think the other lesson we learned this summer from Brexit is that the markets came back. And so it's the old adage of, you don't want to try to time the market, because if you try to get out, like let's say you said, all right, I'm going to get out today. I'm worried about tomorrow, what the results may bring. Well, 3 or 4 months down the line, when the market could come back and it'd be even higher than it is right now. So, yes, I think the general approach of kind of keeping your diversified portfolio and staying in is certainly the approach that pays off over the long term.
I saw some interviews with some leaders from the Arab countries. Some of them said, one of them said they were keeping cash aside and out of the market investments, at least temporarily. Is that a good piece of advice for investors?
Well, I don't think so for folks like you and me, everyday folks. No, that's not good advice, because you got to time it twice. So you don't want to miss the downturns, and we all psychologically get ourselves, I don't want to lose money. But the problem is you also don't want to miss the upswing. And so, you know, getting two calls right, when to get out, but also when to put that cash back in, is an equally important problem. Otherwise, you don't get the returns that you need in your portfolio. I will say, you know, I've heard, too, some people buying gold. If Trump wins, there's expected to be a big surge in the gold prices, possibly going back to $1,400 an ounce. And we're kind of sitting around $1,300 some right now. Again, I think a lot of those are minor plays for most investors if you're going to do anything at all. I will say it was interesting to me. CNBC had David Tepper on, kind of a big hedge fund guy yesterday. And he'd been one of those people all summer around the Brexit who was saying, oh, I'm going more into cash. I'm playing it more cautious. And he actually said he's not right now. He thinks the political situation has stabilized enough. And the reality is whoever wins tonight or by tomorrow morning in the United States, they're going to face a Congress, and that's probably not going to work entirely with them. You know, even if Trump wins Paul Ryan, there's certainly been a little bit of animosity there between the leader of the House and Donald Trump. So it's not, there's going to be a lot of divided government and gridlock still, and that's usually good for markets.
I know you have done a lot of reporting, others have as well, and it seems whenever we do one of these stories, you invariably get the complaints, oh, well, you're just being partisan. But there has been a lot of bipartisan sort of independent research into the impacts both of these candidates would have if they're elected. And what does that independent research show?
Right. That certainly favors Clinton in terms of her economic plans. But and that's largely because of two things. One, the core of her economic plan is infrastructure spending, which should be stimulative at least for a year or two as that money, more government money gets out into the economy. The other thing, which is a little bit more debatable, is the role of immigration. A lot of academic economists and independent groups do think that her immigration plan will basically, we're an aging society, and the argument goes that we need more workers, and particularly skilled workers. And if we can get the skilled workers into America, that should help the economy. Obviously, she also wants to do tax increases. It's unclear how much of a drag that would be on the economy. On the flip side, you've got Donald Trump, and the basic premise there is one we hear a lot from the Republican side, and that is tax cuts. So he wants to do big, big tax cuts for individuals and for businesses, and that's really the heart of his economic plan. And that comes down to what you think of so-called trickle-down economics, that people think that works or not to do those tax cuts to stimulate growth. It would certainly probably stimulate it for a short term. But the other problem with Trump, the thing that really gets people scared, we touched upon it earlier, is his stance on trade. And it's just hard to know if he's elected, how far is he going to go on trade? Is he just going to threaten to do tariffs on products coming from Mexico or China? Or is that kind of part of his negotiating tactics that he likes to talk about all the time? Or is that something that he really considers legitimate policy option? And if he really enacts it, that's what gets people scared. And that's where you get a lot of models in predicting recession if he enacts those big tariffs.
Well, and Heather, you know, everybody says we haven't seen the full effects of Brexit yet. And one of those hitting today, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Toblerone, the chocolate bar, the chocolate company has said it is raising the price of its chocolate in the UK by about 11%, but only in the UK and because of Brexit. So you're messing with chocolate now.
I would just say the only other thing to keep an eye on today for investors is obviously elections driving most of the market action, but it's significant. Oil has been the other factor all year long that's driven the markets, and a big, big deal today, Total, the French company, has just signed a deal to develop in Iran. More of the oil there. So that's opening up those Iranian oil markets and getting that oil back onto the market, world markets. And that's the other big factor that could continue to play into how investors trade today and throughout the rest of the year.
Heather Long, senior stock market writer, economy writer at CNN Money. See you on the other side, Heather.
That's right.
All right. Have a great day. You can follow Heather by Heather Long and her stories at CNN Money, at CNN Money on Twitter and money.cnn.com.
From ABC News Tech Trends, with growing evidence that excessive screen time on smartphones, tablets and handheld games isn't good, many parents struggle with putting their kids on a digital diet.
Come on, give me the iPad.
Why?
Because it's time for you to be off the iPad.
No more iPad.
Julie Cosnan is a mother of two, and she says her son will actually run away at the suggestion that he go outside to play.
They don't know how to not be on it.
Why does this happen? New research shows that while kids play certain video games, rapid dopamine is released in their brain, similar to what drug addicts experience after a fix. And what's more, says Dr. Michael Rich, is that the video game world is a controlled one where kids are in control.
The real world, as it were, is much less predictable, much less controllable than those video games are.
And that makes it harder to get back to the real world. With Tech Trends, I'm Michelle Franz in ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:40 as people head to the polls this election day. Many more of them have health insurance. Many more of you. That's because of the Affordable Care Act. But there's a lot of concern about the prices and the competition. We'll get into some of that coming up. But on the campaign trail for Hillary Clinton this week, President Obama talked about his centerpiece legislation.
Never in American history has the uninsured rate been lower than it is right now. And healthcare prices have been rising slower than they have in 50 years. Most of us don't get our healthcare through the marketplace. We get it through our job or through Medicare or Medicaid. And what you should know is that thanks to the Affordable Care Act, your coverage is better today than it was before. Today, 20 million more American adults know the financial security of health insurance. On top of that, another 3 million more kids have coverage than when I took office.
It is the Affordable Care Act, but again, there are concerns with rising costs, and we want to talk about that this morning. Our conversation features America's money answers man, Jordan Goodman, is with us this morning on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be with you.
It's good to have you on. This is concerning to a lot of folks. The president is accurate. More people are insured, and that's a good thing, but these rising costs have a lot of people concerned.
Well, that's right. There's about 20 million people who are now insured who are not. But for the most part, those are older, sicker people who couldn't get insurance before. Either they couldn't afford it or they had pre-existing conditions. So that is a good thing. But the problem is that the premiums have been going up dramatically. You know, people said, what was going to be the November surprise before today's election? The November surprise was on November 1st, people found out how much more their premiums are going to go up. on a national basis, about 25%. Some states, Arizona, 116% average. Tennessee, 63%. Illinois is about 33%, something like that. So these are huge increases, and there's still 27 million people who are not insured. They've chosen not to, or they thought it's better to pay the penalty instead of paying the premiums, and particularly younger, healthier people are the ones who are without insurance in many cases. The whole Obamacare deal financially was to have the younger, healthier people join and subsidize the older, sicker ones. Well, the older, sicker ones joined, the younger, healthy ones didn't. So that's why we're in this crisis right now.
There has been some misinformation, though, on this, and it's important that people get the facts and know what it is. These price increases, as at least as I understand it, only impact people who are coming into the marketplace? Is that what
no.
I'm
No, not everybody's not, premiums going up.
So I mean, even if you have the Affordable Care Act right now, your premiums will go up.
Yeah, I mean, it's across the board. And not only are they going up, but many, many companies have dropped out of the exchanges altogether. Aetna, Cigna, UnitedHealthcare have pulled out of many, many. So in many, many cases, you literally have no choice. There's only one company offering it in your particular area. So, and then on top of that, the deductibles have gone up dramatically. The amount you have to cover out of pocket before you get covered at all. And I just had this, went through this myself, Steve. I'm in New York, and I had Oxford, which is part of UnitedHealthcare, and they said, as of January 1st, we are pulling out of New York altogether. So goodbye. I've been paying premiums, never met the deductibles for years. Thank you very much. We're out of here, basically, is what they said. And so I just talked to a health insurance broker yesterday. There's only one choice for me, Blue Cross. That's it. There is no competition. There is no choice. This is in New York.
Right,
there could be some competition here.
The White House says that the subsidies people get to help pay for offset some of this will also go up. So that might help.
That's true. Yeah. That is true. Subsidies. It cost about $56 billion last year for the subsidies, and those will go up. That comes out of the taxpayers' pocket because 85% of the people on Obamacare are getting subsidies one way or the other. Without those subsidies, they wouldn't be able to afford it. So that's correct.
Now, the presidential candidates have differing views about where to proceed, how to proceed on this. One of them wants to scrap this altogether. One of them wants to make some fixes. What is the better solution?
Well, Hillary is basically talking about bringing the age down that people would be able to get Medicare. Right now it's 65. She'd want to bring that down to 55. Well, that would help, but a lot of people, that's going to be a huge budget buster to do something like that. She's also wants to expand Medicaid in more places. She just basically wants to double down on Obamacare is what it comes down to. But the underlying problem is you have to get these young, healthy people to join, and they're sitting at home in their basement paying their student loans. You know, so this is not a priority for them in many cases. And I mean, people say you have to mandate. Well, we did mandate it. So what they do is they pay a penalty instead of paying the premiums. That's the kind of economic change you have to get. Now Trump, it's very unclear to me what he so-called repeal and replace it. He's talking about bringing in health savings accounts and having competition across state lines. Well, HSAs are nice, but as I just said, 85% of the people who are getting it are getting subsidized. They don't have money sitting around to put into an HSA, so that's not very realistic for most people. On competition across state lines, these companies are pulling out. They don't want to go into more states. They're going into fewer states. So unless you change, it has to be profitable for an insurance company to go into a state and compete. That's not what's happening right now with the current situation. The costs keep going up and up, and the premiums have to go up these dramatic levels to offset these higher costs because you have people dropping out. I mean, as you know, Steve, I do shows around the country. A lot of people say, I can't pay it. I just cannot afford a 63% increase, and I'm going to drop it. So I think when these things go into effect January 1st, a lot of people are going to drop their insurance, which is financially not smart, but they have to do it, and they're going to be uninsured. So it's going to go the other direction.
You talk about it being not financially smart. Let's hit on that for just a moment. The 66% increase in your rates for insurance compared to a catastrophic illness. I mean, isn't this sort of like investing a little bit? I know people don't have the money to do it, but the cost on the other end.
Financial Russian roulette. I mean, what's going to hit me next? I mean, you don't plan on having a car accident or getting run over by something or having a heart attack, but you do, and that's what insurance is about. I like to say about insurance, it's the one thing you buy hoping never to use it, because when you need to use it, you can't buy it. That's why it's okay. So, I mean, for young people who think they're invulnerable, it is financially very dangerous to be running around without insurance, because if something major does happen, planned or unplanned, you know, you could be hit by a drunk driver or something. It has nothing to do with you, but doesn't mean you're going to get really messed up. It's financially devastating if you don't have insurance for something like that. So that's why it's so difficult for people, you know, financially. It's something like 50% of bankruptcies are because of financial bills that they can't cover, right? So it's very financially dangerous to do what a lot of people are doing.
Yeah, I think the number is a little bit higher than that. I think bankruptcies with medical are more than 50%. It's up there along with student loans and other stuff. So what's right. The answer? We just have a minute or so left. What's the answer?
I'll tell you what I do. There's a place I go to which is called medicalrepricing.com. They've got a phone number, too, 888-589-3000, and they'll help you get the best policy available wherever you are. My strategy is to get as high a deductible and lower premium as possible. I'm basically healthy, as are probably most of your listeners. If you're in that circumstance, I want the money in my pocket, not the insurance company's pocket. So, I mean, this year, the new policy I'm going to get, the deductible went from $5,000 to $7,000, as crazy as that may be, but the premium is more affordable. Now, if you're having a lot of health issues, then, okay, then you have a higher premium but lower deductible because you're going to use it a lot. But for most average healthy people, go for the lowest premium. Among the Obama tiers, they call that the bronze plan, for example. You're going to have a high deductible, but the repricing part is your everyday expenses are repriced from the retail price as long as you're in-network. So that'll save you some money. In the situation, that's the best people can do. Again, medicalrepricing.com. 888-589-3000. And I'm always glad to get emails about this at my website, moneyanswers.com.
Jordan, good of you to be with us today. You can follow Jordan Goodman at Goodman, J-O-R-D, on Twitter. And head over to his website, moneyanswers.com. Jordan Goodman, thanks for being with us. Happy Election Day.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
All right, 549 here on the opening bell. And by the way, if you didn't jot down that number fast enough, 888-589-3000. 3,000, 888-589-3000 could offer you a little bit of help.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
554 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are off 25 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Let's get the latest on ag and commodity. And now, good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, yesterday, live cattle futures took it on the chin again, closing lower for a fourth straight session. Most actively traded December cattle futures down $1.07 yesterday. And the wholesale beef market, we saw choice wholesale beef prices down $1.07 yesterday from Friday's price. Lean hogs, well, turned higher for the day thanks to buy stops and short covering after some recent market declines, and that lifted CME lean hogs yesterday. December hogs gained 95 cents a hundredweight. Grain trade yesterday, more good export news. The soybean market gaining because of that. November soybeans were up 8 cents a bushel. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced sales of U.S. soybeans to China, 132,000 tons, 135,000 tons of U.S. soy meal to the Philippines, and exporters sold 172,000 tons of U.S. corn to unknown destinations. But wheat was down 3.5 cents a bushel, corn down 2 cents a bushel, and as we mentioned, November soybeans up 8 cents. There could be less demand for corn next year because of culling of some of the heifers, reducing the number of cattle that will be fed. So the good news is we could see a little bit of an increase in corn consumption this fall and then a decline come next spring. We'll be heading for Kansas City tomorrow in the annual convention of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. Now the Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Tuesday, November 8th. The Labor Department Openings and Labor Turnover Survey is being released today. It's the latest data on job openings and separations from companies. The National Federation of Independent Business Small Business Economic Trends Report is being released as well. The OPEC Outlook is out today. OPEC publishes its annual World Oil Outlook, providing an in-depth review and analysis of the global oil industry. Germany releases industrial production. Japanese automaker Toyota is reporting second quarter results. The Supreme Court will hear Bank of America versus Miami, Wells Fargo versus Miami, both of those consolidated about credit mortgage, and lots of earnings on the calendar today. In addition to Toyota, Dr. Horton, Johnson Controls from Wisconsin, CVS Health, Cinemark, Valiant, Momo, SeaWorld, TripAdvisor, EchoStar, Valvoline, and Vivian Star. In Chicago, Fed President Charles Evans speaks at the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations at 7 o'clock this morning. You can watch that speech online at CFR.org. He'll be talking about monetary policies. All of those things could drive the markets on this election day, November 8th, on the Market Desk Outlook for this day. Finally, it is time to go vote. We have a saying in this country. Actually, it's on all of our money. E pluribus unum. Out of many comes one. Out of many, one. And that's what we do on Election Day. We all come together, we vote, and we elect one as president. Go out and do your civic duty today and then hear your vote count.